Hey. Hey everyone, it's Naomi Wolf, and this is the fourth or fifth Fascism 101 video I'm sharing with you, as I promised. As you know, I feel like as we're in kind of deep collapse from a healthy democracy rapidly into a totalitarian state, it's my patriotic duty basically to share what I know from having studied closing democracy since 2008, since my book, The End of America, and also what I know both from being CEO of a data company, because so much of this is being done via data. And lastly, what I know from having been a political consultant to a president and vice president indirectly with Clinton and directly with Vice President Gore. So those three background areas are unfortunately letting me see more clearly than it seems like a lot of mainstream media are seeing or reporting about what is moving news events. So I'm just going to go ahead and share this essay, and then I'll take your live questions as always. So this is called Thinking Like a Tyrant, and it's a really important, in my view, explanation of how when there's a crisis policy these days in a democracy or a failing democracy, like, and I categorize now the US, Canada, Australia, and the UK as actively failing democracies. And I'll go into the details of that as we go on in future videos. But when there's a crisis or an emergency, there's policy, right? And there are announcements, and there are emergency measures, and there are executive orders, and there are mandates, and there are regulations. And these come at citizens in this barrage in the news. And I've talked about how they're linked, naturally enough, to, in this case, coronavirus statistics. In my last video, I explained as a data tech CEO why we can no longer trust coronavirus statistics now that Steph Simonowitz has disclosed that Boris Johnson and someone in the United States did a deal handing over COVID data to Palantir, to Google, to Microsoft, and to Amazon. And that's not just the NHS data, but the Health and Human Services data. So look at that video because it precedes this one. By the way, since I started doing these videos and they've gone viral, the reach now has been dialed way down. So share and download onto your own computer. It may vanish, it may not get very far. But please do everything you can to share these videos because we can't rely on the algorithm, which is part of my point, to share them. So this video, I'm going to be explaining how when you get that kind of, oh my God, there's, you know, the governor of New York has said we're on pause, or oh my God, you know, no more than so many people are allowed to gather in a room, and in Ontario, I gather the police have now started breaking into rooms to check or validate there are no more than a certain number of people in a room, or oh my God, you get a fine if you walk without a mask in Australia, or oh my God, you know, these are essential services and they can stay open, and these are not and they can stay closed. And even at the level of federal legislation, it's all presented as if it mirrors human need in a crisis. But the headline of this video is, unfortunately, that is just messaging. Some of it mirrors human need in a crisis, hopefully, but a lot of it does not. And you need to understand how this works so that you can make good decisions to protect yourself and your family in these times. So in my Fascism 101 videos and blogs, and can you all hear me? Talk louder, can't hear you. Can you hear me at all? Can you hear me now? Did you hear anything I said? Let me know. Let me know if you can hear me. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. Can you hear me? I'm going to type that. Can you hear me? All right, great. Did you hear what I said leading up till now? Okay, good. All right, so in my Fascism 101 videos and blogs here, I've pointed out that there are many ways to shape the policies in a crisis politically that do not mirror the physical or medical nature of the crisis. This post in this video now is about how to think like a tyrant slash political consultant slash master of the universe. These are very similar thought processes. People are saying it's a little low, so forgive me. I'm going to lean in close to you. So I'm explaining this so you can understand world events better and understand the nature of how this very real pandemic is being exploited by powerful people with other agendas than your personal health and safety. First, always keep in mind that crisis policy is not a mirror of the crisis. What do I mean by that? I'm going to say this again. Crisis policy is not a mirror, a transparent reflection of the needs of the crisis. And again, I'm speaking as a political consultant at the highest levels, formerly, and now as someone who reads legislation and follows the legislative process every day as co-founder of dailycloud.io. So what do I mean by that? I mean that citizens in a democracy, including in a failing democracy, and I'm saying this now, I've held off for a long time, but here we are, a failing democracy such as ours is in the US, the UK, Canada, and Australia right now, believe that policies created at the national level are in reaction transparently to events and crisis. And citizens naturally believe that crisis policy is a mirror of crisis needs because they are people who manage crises in their personal lives. They believe this because the way you decide, say, as US head of household, what steps to take when your house, God forbid, is burning down, or there's been a lightning strike in your home, naturally enough, you've been in crisis situations for you or your immediate family, difficult emergencies, challenging situations, and you react, right? So since people have that experience, they have the assumption that there's that kind of one-to-one reasoning in a crisis on a national level, because you as a citizen in that situation are solely focused on addressing the needs of your house burning down, God forbid, or of the lightning strike. I'm in the United States. People are asking, where do I live? But I'm following closely the United Kingdom, where this is happening too, Canada, where it's happening, and Australia. Those are the countries that I'm following closely. And that's where we're actively seeing a collapse of democracy with coronavirus, very real pandemic, very real emergency, being exploited as cover for other kinds of agendas. But sadly, this is absolutely incorrect. When there is an emergency or crisis at a national or even a state level, there is a vast amount of intermediation between the crisis and the policy, even though it is always explained to citizens as being a mirror image solution to address the needs of the crisis. An example is that there is a huge medical emergency in the US in the form of a viral pandemic. That is real. New York State tells everyone that we are, quote, on pause, including on an economic pause. Then there's legislation that will be passed as a federal coronavirus bill, as a UK coronavirus bill, or a HEROES bill on a federal level in the US, or a state emergency health department order like New York State saying some businesses can close and others can open. These take shape. When that happens, there are dozens and dozens of lobbyists and special interests and several billionaires clamoring to have a say in what that emergency legislation or health department mandate, executive order, regulation looks like. Okay, so you understand what I'm saying here. There are many ways to craft a response to a crisis. Many things you can do that make sense, that would help. But the shape it takes, the language that's used in forming the law, is subject to behind the scenes lobbying, arm twisting, threats, negotiations that you have no knowledge of as citizens, and that reporters have virtually no knowledge of. The lobbyists, okay, so the final policy, regulation or mandate, could take many forms, as I just said, and many people have had a hand in the shape it takes by the time it's announced. These are people you don't see. These can range from big pharma to real estate investors, to telecom and tech companies, to insurers, to any special interest with lobbyists, and of course the billionaires who are kind of above all of this and more influential. The lobbyists these days can include foreign nations, even foreign nations that are not our immediate allies or not even reliable allies. One certainty is that the leaders who will announce the policy owe something to all of these special interests, but the policy will always be announced as a mirror image to the needs of the citizens in the crisis, right? So no matter who has lobbied, who has demanded, who has brokered deals behind the scenes to include what provision or what shape, the announcement, right, the press release, the photo op, the press availability, the press conference, always only says this is because of the medical emergency, it's for medical reasons, or this is because of terrorism, it's to do with fighting terrorism. It is always about saving lives. So what you won't see is that a policy in New York State that keeps, quote, essential businesses open will name those businesses as the huge corporations, not mom and pop shops. I mentioned this in my last video, because mom and pop shops are in Britain, Main Street, High Street stores don't have lobbyists, okay? Or farmers markets will be told that for health reasons, they have to, have the number of farmers, thus killing off, literally killing off. I was at a farmer's market today, half the number of farmers who make a living selling their produce at farmers markets. Rather than making the space bigger to social distance, the mandate is only half the number can show up. So you will be told this is due to health needs, but you won't see the lobbying behind the scenes of agribusiness that by killing off those small farmers who can no longer come to the farmers market, they get the market share of the people who still need milk or still need eggs or lettuce. Or there may already be a contract, such as the contracts that we have found and posted, to sell biomass, which is wood, to China, or wood chips to Japan in Australia. Or developers may already have their eyes on a protected area to develop. And you won't see that pressure when firefighting services are just sent a bit too slowly in to getting to the land in the Australian wildfires that is developable or else exploitable, but only after, and I'm going to say this and it's true, all the protected species are dead, but not on the market before. You won't see that pressure. Or if you are a real estate developer and you know from your contacts inside the mayor's office that there will be a moratorium on rent for 3 months, but no further, then this gives institutional investors, and this is what's happening in New York, a chance to be ready to swoop in and scoop up millions and millions of dollars in profits, when desperate, quote, non-essential workers are kicked out of their rent-controlled apartments in New York City, which you can time, right? 3 months to 6 months from when Governor Cuomo and the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said these workers are essential and these are non-essential, real estate developers could count on mass evictions. Of course, you don't have to be a rocket scientist, meaning that real estate will be super cheap, they can scoop it up, and then at a certain time when the policy changes, it'll shoot up in value, right? It's gaming the market. Or you have Bill Gates and other developers of vaccines putting pressure on the shape of coronavirus policy. So one strategy or one shape that, quote, lockdown can take, one shape it could take is, you know, medically sound, but creating new ways for people to enjoy the outdoors, new ways for people to go to school outdoors, new ways for people to sell their goods outdoors, right? And socially distanced. But no, there's another shape, which is lock everyone inside. And this, I'm not a doctor, as I always stress, but you know, I know that behind the scenes, the shape it takes serves people with something to sell. So one strategy, if you're invested in a vaccine, is to make life so uncomfortable and miserable till a vaccine is ready via long lockdowns that are not necessarily tied to medical data, whose lack of solidity we've addressed in other posts and videos, so that the $1 trillion that's expected if almost everyone on the planet gets a coronavirus vaccine are guaranteed, right? This is about guaranteeing profits rather than being at the mercy of markets and the biggest enemy of crisis capitalism, which is free will and free agency, free mobility, and constitutional rights. So, and these do not have to be in opposition to what is healthy for a community. So the shape that the lockdown takes is influenced by people with goods or services to sell. Or Apple has a contract, as we know from one of my posts, for track and trace technology. And by the way, these contracts were early in 2020, right before anyone knew how bad this this pandemic would be. So you have to highlight the need for tracking and tracing, even if without that pressure, people might feel that tracking and tracing violates basic Fourth Amendment rights to privacy, and so on and so on. But then, and this is where the messaging comes in, and this is the side of where the process and the sausage is made, as we say in politics, that I was on is the message, right? You get the message directive at the end. People think the message comes first, but it doesn't come first. What comes first there's a crisis, then there are the needs of all the insider stakeholders. And at the end, and then a deal is hammered out, right, behind the scenes. At the end, you go to the message team. When you go to the message team, the goal of the message team is not to explain what actually happened, but to sell the outcome. Right? If the outcome is going to serve all these stakeholders in all these ways you can't see, then the job of the message team is simply to sell it in a way that people will swallow it, to find a story, right? And an example of this that I always think about is the U.S. wanted to invade Afghanistan. And, you know, it's we have our own problems. It's a tough sell to sell people who are struggling to pay their rent or pay for a mortgage and look after their own needs and, you know, build their infrastructure, to invade a country for no reason anyone could explain clearly halfway around the world. So the message team under Bush came up with girls are not being allowed to go to school. Well, girls hadn't been allowed to go to school for years and years and years. There was vicious misogyny for years and years and years. But that is what the message team came up with to sell the United States going to Afghanistan. And then it finds individuals who can have articles written about them and people who can tell stories and or create stories. But it's got a selling narrative. And then people go, you know what, those poor girls, they're being really hurt on their way to school. Okay, we should go in and help them. That is what the message team does. The message team does not wake up with the policy people saying girls can't go to school in Afghanistan, right? That is not what happens. All right. So, but then the policy is announced or the health department directive rolled out, and those dozens of hands and scores of fingerprints shaping the public legislative response are not visible to anyone on the receiving end. It is always rolled out as being solely in response to medical teams and peer-reviewed research. Always. That's what comes out at the end of this process. But that's a lie. We hope medical input and peer-reviewed research is part of the decision-making process, but it categorically cannot be said to be the driver because there's so many other hands on the wording of the way the bill or the mandate or the directive will come out. But the lie is received as truth by citizens, understandably, uncritically, because they are afraid, or I should say we are afraid, and because we have no way to see how the sausage is made, as we say in politics. And then the mega corporations and billionaires who all had a say in the shaping of exactly how this emergency would be legislated, what policies would roll out, count their extra millions and billions because the policy serves them as well as hopefully having some medical value. But all the rest of us have become units of managed behavior, left in the dark about why, quote, lockdown in the UK, which looks quite different from what we're living through in America, or pause in upstate New York, which looks different from what's going on in Florida, or, quote, essential workers, right, which has no real rationale, or kids in or out of school, which parents are confused by already, or tests with or without HIPAA, medical privacy protections, look the way they do. And we simply comply because we are scared and we don't have better information. And also because naturally, we assume as compassionate human beings that our leaders would not do this to us, right? That's a natural assumption. We assume they would not sell our well-being in this way. And I'm so sorry to tell you, that's just not how politics in an advanced, largely corrupted democracy like that in the US, that in Canada, that in the UK, and that in Australia is working anymore, and you need to know this. This is a normal legislative process in a democracy that is corrupted, right? And even in a healthy democracy, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that you can't see. There's more power to just serve you as a citizen in a healthy democracy. But emergencies create fantastic opportunities for ramping this process up, as there is no normal scrutiny of legislation and no normal debate. And because reporters can't even ask face-to-face questions or meet with sources off the record or behind a pillar like with Watergate, and because the goal of all lobbyists and corporations is to control citizens' movement and behavior. And I'm not saying that as a conspiracy theorist. I'm just saying that as someone who understands, because I've witnessed it and because I'm friends with some of these people and because I know how the data is used and I know how the legislation is made, I know how the speeches are written, that's their goal, is to control behavior. They don't think they're being evil. It is literally the way capitalism, unrestrained by either journalism or democracy, behaves. It's like a, you know, it's like a zombie that can't keep killing people and eating people because that's its nature. In a free society, you can't do this. So profits are not as secure, right? Because there are checks and balances like journalism. In a COVID closed or COVID managed society, which is what we're starting to be now, and I'm just going to be honest, they're not planning to let you out of this, you know, without some real sacrifices on the part of citizens. I think you need to kind of wake up. It's been 6 months. We are not losing our rights. We are. Doesn't mean it's not a huge medical crisis. It is, but there are many ways to manage medical epidemics, pandemics, as I've said in other videos, looking at tuberculosis, looking at cholera, looking at AIDS especially, and other real crises that humanity has faced. In a COVID-managed society, as real as the pandemic doubtless is, you can craft policy to control people's behavior and movements at scale, which is a dream for mega corporations and billionaires. As I believe Churchill put it, and someone said it already in the comments, never waste a good crisis. Crisis is an absolute bonanza for special interests, as Naomi Klein long ago pointed out in the Shock Doctrine. The takeaway from what I'm telling you in this post and this video, even when a policy is rolled out as in response to COVID, or even when a policy is rolled out as in response to COVID or in response to wildfires or to terrorists or to any other crisis. Don't just freeze and submit. Don't assume that nothing but benign leaders with no task in the course of their day, but making sure you and your family are healthy and that society is healthy, are making these decisions. That is not the case, unfortunately. Indeed, it is not you and your family's well-being that is the target of that policy. Indeed, your needs often come last of all, although the messaging will always claim that your needs are first of all. So don't be afraid to be skeptical, and don't be afraid to ask questions. Learn how to read peer-reviewed medical research. It seems very daunting at first, but it's really not that hard. Once you get used to it, you can get the gist. Ask your friends to join with you in reading peer-reviewed medical research and helping each other get used to reading it, right? This is a situation for actual scientists, actual doctors, and not for Google and Microsoft and Amazon and billionaires like Bill Gates and Michael Bloomberg, who are not epidemiologists, who are not virologists, right? Don't be afraid to get a second purely medical opinion when you are told to do something by the state in a pandemic. Like the UK, two things just happened. They have legislation, which I warned you about in March, that is deferring elections for at least another year until 2030 in some parts of the United Kingdom, in Northern Ireland. And also they have created a kind of workaround so to bypass normal parliamentary processes. This has happened in Australia as well. And I told all of you in about April, when it was happening in Australia, that Australia is a petri dish, it's a test case, and that it would then be rolled out in the UK and Canada, and they're going to try it in America, although we're not as much in the line of legislative experiments that go Australia, UK, Canada. But this is very serious. Once you have those committees deciding policy and you upend normal parliamentary processes, you don't have the power as citizens a year from now, 2 years from now, right? When all of our rights are stripped from us, and I'm not saying anything about the pandemic, which I, again, believe is very, very serious. You will not have democracy anymore. You won't have recourse, right? So this is a critical moment because we have to avoid a bloody civil war in the future. That's what happens at this point after elites have closed normal parliamentary processes, after elites have started to use unelected committees, as in Australia, to decide policy or to defer elections, as in the UK. We need to avoid that, okay? So don't be afraid to get second opinions when from doctors and epidemiologists when you're told to do something by the state in a pandemic. Like Britain is being told right now, there's going to be another 6-month lockdown, far more severe than what we're living through right now. And in New York City, I can tell you coronavirus stats have flattened, and people are out and about. They're not living like people in the UK. So again, I'm not a doctor, but I'm saying there are many ways to do this. There are many ways epidemiologically to help people be healthy that don't involve losing all your freedom to assemble, freedom to move, freedom to speak, freedom to protest, freedom to lobby, and normal legislative processes in a democracy. Don't be afraid to create community-sourced policies, voluntary outreach, common sense community identified needs based on community values and community consulted, peer reviewed, right? Listen to the scientists, listen to the doctors, but don't let there be intermediaries between them and you, research and medical experts, all right? Go straight to the doctors, go straight to the peer reviewed research, go straight to the epidemiologists, demand good numbers, as I said in the last video. Demand original numbers, without intermediaries, and then be safe and well is how I sign off. So that is my explanation of how emergency measures take shape, based on my insider's view for many years, not just as a consultant to the lead consultant crafting the Clinton reelection campaign, not just as a formal consultant to Vice President Al Gore on women's messaging and messaging in general, which is how I know how messaging works. Also as the former wife to a Clinton speechwriter, I know how messaging works. And lastly, as someone who reads the legislation every week as a co-founder and CEO of Daily Clout. All right, so let's see if there are any important questions. Chris Kiriakou says, thank you, Dr. Wolf. Can you hear me? God bless you in Christ, amen. Love from Northern Ireland. Thank you. I will take blessings from any religion, gratefully. So I appreciate that. I want to warn Northern Ireland that the coronavirus bill, which was, I can't stress this enough, a complex bill crafted in March before anyone knew if this would be 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, deferred elections in Northern Ireland till 2030. I hope you all heard that. And there's literally at that time no reason, no justification. I remember thinking, what on earth could justify this? And it deferred elections in the UK till 2021 elsewhere. Brian Keane says, I've seen you speak in Glasgow for Scottish independence. Thank you. Brian Keane, thank you. That's a very moving memory of mine. I travel to Scotland, my beloved Scotland, where I've lived for 3 or 4 years. It has my heart, as do other communities, but Scotland has my heart. And I saw in the Scottish referendum that the people were about to be disempowered of their voice. And then I did investigative reporting, which no one was doing for Daily Clout. And I found that there were 400 individually attested ballots with names and eyewitnesses, first name, last name. We made a spreadsheet. People were standing up and saying, this happened to me, 400 of them, similarly ruined ballots, blank ballots, make it impossible for them to vote. But that when we tried to figure out who's responsible for counting the votes in the referendum, it was a circle. People were told to report to the police. The police were told to report to the council. The council were told to report to the Electoral Commission, which, by the way, works for the English, you know, for the London government, which would have been affected by the outcome of the Scottish referendum if it was yes for devolution. So there was no one to count the votes. There was no one to count the ballots and make sure that they were okay. So I'm sorry I didn't save your process. I only was an eyewitness on the right side of history to how that count was being corrupted. And that really led me to find that citizens before any election have to find out what happens if the election is contested, what happens if we need to verify it. We found out laboriously that you had to file a motion with a judge in Scotland, but you only had like 30 days or 45 days. It wasn't public knowledge. And there was a lot of disinformation in social media urging people to question what we had found. But that was true. So Scotland, in your next referendum, please go in prepared, as we're trying to go in prepared with the law and with a plan B and good communications here in America, although it's likely to be at least as chaotic as it was for you. God bless you, Scotland. All right. Leaders, bloody liars, says Sophie Jones. Chris Kiriakou says, Doctor, we know exactly what's going on. Problem is you need a PhD voice to counter an official medical narrative. Doctors are the key to this war, along with legal experts. Then the rallies have merit. I would say yes, it's very important to have real knowledge and not spin. I mean, people who are discounting the danger of this, discounting solid data, are as dangerous as people who are manipulating solid data. We need the doctors, but I also want to encourage all of you to train yourselves as experts, right? Part of the process of disempowering citizens is to tell them, you're not a doctor, What do you know? You're not a legislator. What do you know? You can't read the law. You know, you can't know what the rules are for a referendum. You're not a pundit. You know, this is all bullshit, if you'll pardon my frank language. All of us in a democracy have to say, I am entitled to be an expert, and I'm going to research, and I may not have a doctorate. You know, I may not be a medical doctor, but I'm going to hone my critical skills. I'm going to check my sources. If you guys need information on good sourcing, it's up on the Daily Clout website, what good sourcing is. I'm going to call the experts out with actual data. I'm going to be a citizen journalist. I'm going to hold a rally. I'm going to inform people. It's so important. Don't hand over your power, but do educate yourselves. Do go to primary sources. Do ask. You'd be amazed how many doctors and epidemiologists are willing, not if you email them like, I'm just one person, answer this question, but if you get 50 or 100 of your neighbors and organize yourselves in a with a name and send a group email with signatures to an epidemiologist, that person might give you a Zoom call for 15 minutes. That person might answer your questions or hop on the phone. Actually, you need it in writing for it to be useful in pushing back. But if you literally just ask questions and challenge statements, that helps. Let's see. Terrible world we're living, says Sophie Jones. 1% are controlling. Stand up to them. It's critical. I mean, we're shifting into a moment. If we don't regain our power and demand our power, when we won't have control over our own history. Oh God. Sophie Jones says, yes, in England, 6-month lockdown, not in Scotland, Northern Ireland, or Wales. Well, you guys really need to think about that. Interestingly, we're not getting news here in the United States in much detail about the lockdown, and that word itself you should question, right? Because in a free society, no one can lock you down, right? It's in a police state they can lock you down. There can be health measures. There can be, you know, closings of spaces that are likely to spread a virus, like when the baths were closed during the HIV epidemic. But in a free society, no one can control your movements apart from limited prohibitions like that. So you need to ask yourselves, and I wish I had more information about this, send it to me, why? You know, if we're all equally at risk from this terrible virus, which, you know, science, medicine, bugs, you know, viral infection doesn't discriminate between English people, Scottish people, Northern Irish, or Wales, why is England in a 6-month lockdown and not these other regions, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales? And I would guess, speaking as a political consultant, that it may be partly that that's where the major cities are concentrated. Although New York is such an example of how even major cities with pretty minimal restrictions, right? I mean, people were never kept inside their homes in New York. After 6 months, you know, has very little new infection. I'm not saying we're okay. People are being very careful. There are good measures like, you know, sanitizing everywhere and, you know, masks on mass transit and, you know, sensible measures, but people are free to move around. So why? And I would venture that an election is swayed in Britain far more by England than by Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. And Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales are already difficult to control by London. There's already devolution or resistance or populations that don't take on board as gospel what the, you know, government based in Parliament has to say from bitter history. So I'd like to look at that more, but you guys should be asking questions. Why England and not Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland? Let's see. It's a local lockdowns here, UL. Do you mean UK? And let's see. HiDef says, I believe in committee and goals so long as they are protected from losing objectivity and sense of purpose. And absolutely. I mean, in a crisis, you should have elected officials who are convening with medical experts and transparently sharing the data and the sourcing. But that is not what's happening. The CDC data, to repeat what I said yesterday, has been rerouted to the White House. NHS data has been handed over by Boris Johnson to Google, Microsoft, Palantir, which helped him win the election, by the way, or a version of Cambridge Analytica helped him win the election, and Amazon, which profits from every single lockdown. So it is no longer our elected officials coolly sitting with people who care about us and our knowledge about how a pandemic unfolds, how viruses unfold, current with a peer-reviewed research. That's not who's making the decisions. Let's see. Botox injections. Chris Kiriakou said, I do not conform, denied my son Botox injections as not complying to testing. I've never heard of Botox injections for a child except for cosmetic surgery, which is only for adults. So I don't know what that refers to, but I'd like to know more. Let's see. We need to empower people, says High Def. Jake Zinger says, I respect your courage to speak out, but I think you still think you have your facts wrong about the med data. Let me stress, Jake, if I may call you by your first name, I'm not making claims about the right medical approach to a pandemic. I am not a doctor. I am saying that we are not getting good medical data. And if you have any questions about that, please go back to my last video from 2 days ago about the data, because as CEO of a data tech company, I'm telling you that now that the data from NHS and HHS are flowing through Google and Microsoft and Palantir and Amazon, you are not getting unmediated primary source medical data. David Brick says, England is not in a new lockdown yet, but restrictions still apply. And Peggy Watson also said, thank you. England is not in a new lockdown yet, but restrictions, also says England has restrictions, but is not in a lockdown. So look, you know, look at those restrictions, you know, and also with messaging, pay close attention to language, because you can close a whole society or strip people of their rights and call it a pause, or call it a rest, or call it a vacation, you know, so be careful about phrases like restrictions. You know, look at each of them, look at the law. I looked at your law in England about assembly, the rule of six. It is so confusing, and it is so bizarrely opaque. And thinking as a political consultant, the result of it is to make sure that people can't organize to challenge anything that's happening to them. No matter who it is, says Jacob Sabat, it is imperative that each and every one of us, without exception, helps to build a majority voting bloc in their city, town, village, made up of individuals who are well-informed, free of misinformation and disinformation on all the major issues of today. And I totally agree with you. However, urgently, you need to be aware that your parliament is having new processes imposed that bypass normal influence such as that you describe. And the same has happened months now, for months in Australia. And with the reports I'm hearing of police being able to break into people's homes or enter people's homes in Ontario to check if they're assembling, that bar has been broken as well. Linda Dean says, the Australian situation, can you please speak to that? Linda, I can devote a separate video to that. I've been covering it on dailycloud.io. There's Daily Cloud Australia, which is also bringing us information. But I need you guys to help, because we don't see a lot of news about that. I wouldn't know about it if my community wasn't bringing me information like what's happening in Victoria, or people being fined for walking alone without a mask on, and so on. So send it to me and Daily Cloud. Please support Daily Cloud if you possibly can. It's very difficult. We're a tiny staff to cover all these issues, to research everything accurately, and to produce and present this material. So we do need your help. We're paying researchers, we're paying videographers, we're paying data scientists and developers, and you know, please support these efforts if you can. Christina, but yes, I'll do a separate video about Australia after you send me, all of you send me, and I'll look, but your media has been disemboweled in Australia. Send me eyewitness reports. Christina, I can't pronounce your name, I'm sorry. Lundberg II says, Dr. Wolf, I lived through the lockdown in Spain this spring. Not as bad as you might think. Andalusia, not Madrid. It actually helped. Not in favor of lockdowns, but not so easy a question. So this is very important, these eyewitness accounts from around the world, because there are ways to have a virus that are not as restrictive on citizens' daily lives. For instance, opening up wild areas for people to walk, you know, having classrooms outside, healthcare, you know, for everyone, right? So I would love to know more about what made, I hate the word lockdown, but what made living through a pandemic in Spain with health measures, let's say, less onerous than the kinds of things we're hearing about in Victoria, Australia, and in parts of England, and people breaking into private homes in Canada. Sophie Jones says, Boris and his party are handing out contracts like confetti borrowed money. Who the hell pays the price? The public. That is true. Thank you. We have had curfews, says Linda Dean. I'm not sure what country that is. And we in New York had curfews, which surprised me very much. It had to do with not going out at night. How does going out at night affect spreading a virus any more than going out during the daytime? It's about density. It's not about night or day. So what I'm seeing is a lot of extra acculturation to a police state, in addition to good public health measures, right? Nighttime versus daytime doesn't make a difference when you're a virus, but it does make a difference in training people to accept that the mayor of New York can tell me with my First Amendment rights freely to assemble when I can go outside and when I can't. So that, I want to end on a happy note. Oh, wow. Morteza Raffier says, we have been in lockdown for many months now in Melbourne. We have also had night curfew, which is the military source for controlling the masses, and no one in state government took responsibility for that decision. Police in Victoria are running the lockdown and not our elected representatives. They are arresting pregnant women and harassing old women in parks. Morteza, thank you. That was very valuable that we have that eyewitness account. Never call yourselves not an expert. You're an expert on what you see and live through. So write these things down, right? And get them out and get them to me privately if you don't want to get them out on social media. Don't leak any classified information to me, but tell me what you're living through and I will try to shine a light. That is really terrifying to me. And it's terrifying what you've just said about lockdown in Melbourne, police taking responsibility for the curfew in Melbourne, arresting pregnant women, harassing old women in parks. I've seen some videos. I haven't confirmed them. Because, again, Australia is a petri dish. And when you emerge, they're dismantling already aspects of your normal parliamentary processes. If they bypassed your leaders, that's already a police state, right? And you already don't have recourse. So this is quite terrifying. This is a very important witness. Kathy John says, I work in a nursing home and I see the toll these lockdowns are taking on our elderly. They are withering away from broken hearts. They have not been allowed to touch their families since March. I get the virus is real. However, I think the cure, quote unquote, is creating so many other important issues that need to be addressed. Kathy John, thank you for your, again, professionally important, right? They are not the only experts. Kathy John is an expert. She's in the front lines every day to see what is really hurting elderly people. So the virus hurts elderly people. They die of it. We know that. But isolation has been peer-reviewed, confirmed, to kill and make sick elderly people. Not touching human beings lowers immunities. Oh, wow, that's important. So, you know, this is so critical. And no other infectious disease, no other disease is being treated in this way, isolating people, keeping them from touching their loved ones. In Melbourne, we have only the choice of shopping at the big three, says Linda Dean. That's super important. Do you see the pattern that over and over in country after country, democracy and after democracy, the shape of the policy kills off small business, fractures families, isolates people, silences dissent. So that is very important, because you could argue that shopping at mom and pop shops is safer than shopping in a gigantic super spreader possible, you know, warehouse of the big three, I assume big three corporations. Could a big part of why America's and world's COVID death count be so high is that invasive ventilators? I don't know the answer. I'm not a doctor. But I do think it's interesting, and then I really need to wrap it up. Linda Dean says, that says Victoria has poured a lot of funds into supporting homeless and family violence. I work in the front line. Thank you for your service, Linda Dean. And I know you. I think you've been part of this community for a long time. I'm always glad to hear from you and appreciate your voice. Thank you for the work you're doing, helping your community. But, you know, it's really up to, in a free society, it's up to individuals to assess risk and to, you know, to protect others. You know, I always go back to the HIV pandemic. Thousands of people died, but it was the community that insisted on good public health policies. It was the community that insisted on people taking responsibility for protecting other people. It was the community that insisted on people changing behavior. And we could have, if we locked every person with HIV into their rooms till they died, we could have, you know, probably lives would have been saved, but that would have been a horrific violation of every single human rights norm. And we need to think about that. Okay, we could go on. This is obviously important. I have to close. It's been 51 minutes. I want to thank you. The book is The End of America, about how to close democracy. The prequel that I'm really asking you to support me by buying or ordering or asking your library to order is called Outrages, Sex, Censorship, and the Criminalization of Love. It's about how states first invented ways to intrude on people's private lives, on people's bodies. So please, it's just coming out. I've been silenced before. I'm asking you to please order it, you know, ask your library to get it, read it, share it. If you want to support this kind of reporting, please become a member of dailyclout.io. And, you know, I'll do my best. I mean, this is the great collapse. And, you know, I'm very, very frightened. And I, you know, I really meditate and pray regularly these days. What are best efforts? It's overwhelming. Even knowing everything I know, it's overwhelming. And I keep getting just, you know, take it one step at a time. Yeah, HIV is sexually transmitted, not airborne, absolutely, but there were calls, you know, well into the HIV pandemic to quarantine people with HIV. So there, I'm just saying, you know, tuberculosis is airborne, but whole societies were not locked down before there was a cure for tuberculosis. They're free societies that have certain freedoms, and they take steps to protect people with public health legislation in ways that do not step over into becoming a police state. So, thank you, Dr. Wolf. I'll certainly order this book, says Sophie Jones. Thank you, Sophie Jones. And again, just know that there are few people out there like my publisher who are taking risks these days in bringing independent voices out. And as I've said in other videos, you really have to support them economically, because they are beleaguered. And there's a global effort, and I'll do a video on this, to really stamp out independent voices and to really harass and smear and reputationally attack independent voices or critics of, you know, the consensus. So please do support me, support the book, support my publisher, Chelsea Green, support Daily Clout. And I hope I'll see you tomorrow. And if not, every other day. So please come back to this. It's Naomi Wolf, it's Daily Clout, it's Outrages, and it's The End of America. Thank you so much. Be safe and well.